Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning, David Slack.
Morning, Johnny.
How's it going?
Very, very good, thank you.
Now,
I might go for a bike ride in a minute. It's
I got my bike ride in this morning. I commute to and from work on a bicycle. I can highly recommend it. Highly recommend it, people out there. And it is tis the season to be doing it and to enjoy some nice weather while you're doing so.
Hell yeah. Inhale the world around you. It's bloody good.
Now, this morning for political commentary, we are talking about austerity, the Reserve Bank, and other invisible forces.
Yes. There's a piece in The Conversation, which I recommend to everybody if they don't already follow it, which gathers together a lot of the good stuff from various academics around the country and makes it available for a wider audience. And the piece that I liked yesterday was from Jeff Bertram, one of our outstanding academics, and he's written about the economic policy settings that the government's following. And essentially, what he's saying is that their cure is actually making things worse. That although they might imagine that the tools they're using are helping to pull the car out of the ditch, which is the metaphor Chris Luxon cannot stop using. He says Labour put the car in the ditch and we're getting it back out, and that's reinventing history right there. But let's leave that bit to one side and just look at the actual problem.
Is it because the problem is slightly more nuanced and the tools should be more nuanced than what they're currently using?
There are a couple of things going on here. One is that they're making a great virtue of cutting spending and cancelling projects because they think that that's going to make things better. But what we're told by the use of three graphs that can start to confuse you if you're not too familiar with economics, but if you are involved in the study of economics, will be blindingly obvious to you that what they're doing is making things worse. And there are three graphs. The first one is about investment and saving, and that shows how interest rates have an effect on things. And what that's showing is that the cutting, the spending, and the cancelling projects is having a it's exacerbating the problem. It's a self-reinforcing downward spiral that the recession increases the costs to the government of unemployment benefits and lower tax revenue, and that means in turn they've got to cut further. They have to keep cutting, and over time the problem they think they're fixing is going to get worse. That's the first thing, the austerity aspect. The second bit is the idea that inflation falls in a recession and it rises during a boom. And this is something people have sort of understood that always applies forever. Well, according to the second graph, which is called a Phillips curve, what we're seeing is that this actually may not be the way things work anymore. And this is getting quite obvious if you look at the way the world's economic activity has shifted since COVID. You know, you had the supply lines got disrupted, and at that point the shipping firms have taken the opportunity to make out like bandits, and so moving stuff around the world has become vastly more expensive. I just picked that as one example. But in general, mostly what this is arguing, and it chimes with what I reckon I've been seeing as well, is that much of the inflation that we're getting here is not arising from that system that you used to think of, but rather from external factors like those shipping costs going up, like multinationals pushing their prices up. In other words, much of the inflation we've been getting has been international market forces, not what was going on here. And so what Jeff Bertram is asking in this piece is, does the Reserve Bank interest rate policy actually still hold? Because, you know, the Reserve Bank is asked to control inflation by moving the interest rates. And what he's saying is, this may not be the right place to look for fixing. And in fact, if we'd just sat still and waited, the inflation would have come down anyway. And further, you've got the government saying, oh, look, if we spend less, that'll assist in the inflation fight. And again, that may be the wrong assumption, that actually it was other forces that were doing it. It's stopped now, but they are nonetheless cutting their spending. And right at a time when we would actually do better from the government going on spending, or indeed spending more, because otherwise we get a recession. Otherwise the recession gets deeper. That means that the government, if it still believes in this idea that it's got to cut costs to save us, will actually make the problem worse. So that's the essence of this piece, and I can't say I disagree with it. They're kind of simplistic thinkers, this government, and they are not doing us any favours.
What lessons could Aotearoa learn from other countries that have faced similar austerity measures and economic challenges?
Well, you can take a big lesson from the UK for starters, because they've had about 10 years of repetitive austerity approaches, and that means that their NHS is on its knees. They've got terrible problems from the exacerbation of the wealth disparities, and the confidence of people erodes over time when you do that. Whereas, if you take, for example, the big Scandinavian economies who are doing really, really well, we kind of have made a fetish out of getting taxes as low as you can and talked about it as being a burden, when in fact, when you spend tax, when you contribute tax, and you spend it intelligently in the way that Scandinavian economies do on your health system and your education system and R&D and supporting a wider economy, good things come. You know, there is a real role for a government to tax a lot and spend a lot, or rather spend a lot and invest a lot, so that the greater good flourishes. You know, when you do that, when you do it intelligently, like Sweden does, like Denmark does, you get good results. And what we're kind of looking for here, keep asking for here, is to have a low tax economy, but we want to have the benefits of a high tax economy, like the Scandinavian ones. So what I'm obviously getting at is we ought to be changing the way we look at tax and actually say it's a good thing, it's a helpful thing, and if we tax more, we can actually encourage our economy into something better. And I'll give you one example of that. We have a very narrow-based economy that mostly relies on exporting dairy and, to a lesser extent, tourism, and not a whole lot else, whereas a successful economy is much broader, so that, you know, as various markets rise and fall, overall you're doing okay. If you're a broader economy, there are much more opportunities for young people to go into work in those fields. If you have a broader economy, you have more prospects of somebody discovering something amazing, like, oh, I don't know, the Nokia phone that did so well for the Finnish economy for so long. And in particular, we've got on the horizon the prospect of being one of the world's great suppliers of renewable energy. And that, because we've got solar, we've got hydro, we've got vast amounts of wind. We call the Saudi Arabia of winds by people who are in the sustainable wind energy field. If we did all that, we would become this very desirable destination for investors, for businesses looking to take advantage of great renewable energy. And yet this government is showing only this, you know, it says nice words about it, but it's doing stuff all to actually take us there. Whereas if you jumped in boots and all and said, let's really make ourselves a hell of an energy economy, we could be transforming things. So, you know, the lesson from looking around the world is be prepared to spend money to get the money, to get the change in your economy that you would like to see.
David, great points. One last question. Given the current trajectory, what are your predictions for Aotearoa's economic situation in the next year?
I don't see them changing, because I look at somebody like Nicola Willis, who is so sure she's right and is so ready to cut off people who find fault with her, that they are going to just keep on going with this whole idea of cut and shrink, and they've already cut Wellington off at the knees. I think things are going to get quite a lot worse before they get better.
All right. On that parting note, David, thank you so much for chatting this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a fortnight's time.
You're welcome.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.